You're listening to Over the Line on Galway Bay FM, the sporting sound of Galway.
Now, our special guest this week is none other than Ireland and Connacht wing three-quarter, Mac Hansen. Firstly, Mac, thank you very much for joining us as a special guest on this week's Over the Line.
Thank you very much for having me. Pleasure.
Mac Hansen, two questions to start us off. Mac, is it an abbreviation of a longer name? And where was Mac Hansen born?
It is. It is an abbreviation of Mackenzie, shortened down. A lot of people growing up thought that it was McAllister for some reason. Don't know why. That Dan McKellar, when he signed me, thought my name was McAllister the whole time. It's good to see he took an interest in me. And then I was born in Manly in Sydney, but grew up in Canberra, so in the nation's capital.
And Manly, of course, would be a home of a great rugby league setup.
Yeah. Manly Warringah, the Seagulls. That's who my brother and my mum go for, actually. But me and my dad go for the West Tigers. So, funny enough, my dad's dad played for West Magpies back in the day. And then the Magpies and Balmain Tigers came together and created the one club. So, if anybody's into league, they know how hard it is to support the Tigers there. They're not the easiest team in the world. You think Connacht's hard? Try the West Tigers, people.
And, of course, your mother, the reason you qualified so to become an Irish citizen, an Irish player, is your mother is originally from the sporting capital, as they like to call it. We don't. Of Cork.
Yep. Yeah. She was born in Castlemata. So I have a lot of family in Castlemata and Middleton, down in Cork, which I've been lucky enough to catch up with. And it was quite interesting coming over and kind of getting a whole new family of people that you hadn't met, and they've been great since I've been over here. Still catch up with them a good bit, and yeah, I was lucky enough to get down there last year and see the old family home my mum grew up in. She moved to Australia quite young, but it's funny enough, it's actually a chipper now down there. I think it's called Mr. Tasty. Or
what would her name have been before she became Nancy?
O'Shea.
Oh.
Now we
understand, William, how he has so many relations.
Absolutely, that's a proper Cork name, you'd have to say. Yeah. Just growing up, Mac, just when you started, where did you start playing rugby? What was the first time you saw a rugby ball? And you said that your grandfather was a rugby league man, but where did you see a rugby ball first?
Yeah, so funny enough, I started off playing soccer and really enjoyed playing it. Or football. I think everyone will kill me if I call it soccer again. So I ended up playing, it was just called Pee-wees back then. So we played that, and I ended up, one of my best mates, his name's Hamish Dawson. His dad was president of a club called the Uni North Owls. And don't know, his dad Andrew's always been a great recruiter. Even now, he's not really involved with the club anymore, but he's always telling people to get down to the club and get involved. And he kind of just said it to my dad. I don't know. He said, just come along, give it a try. And once I got a taste for it, I loved it. I didn't think I'd change from soccer. And then, yeah, as soon as I got a rugby ball in my hand, it was hard to take it out of it. So I'd say my dad was thrilled. He didn't really have to watch too many more soccer games after that.
The fact that and I love this, that you started off with soccer, which is something a lot of people wouldn't know, but the rugby, why was the rugby, was it just, this is different, there's more into this, and it's backs and forwards, and I got to find where it's going to suit me?
It's tough to know, you know. There's a couple moments, specific moments I can't remember growing up, that some big games where, you know, I might have scored a runaway try or something like that as a kid. And I just remember going back to Andrew and my dad, I've made a break, and it was to get us into the final. And I just remember them going nuts, and I almost literally stopped and looked at them, and they had to keep telling me to, they were using some words that I can't really say on air, but they were telling me to go as a kid, like, just keep running. And I remember scoring that try, and then it was literally since then I was hooked. So it was about, it would have been like seven or eight, and was absolutely hooked from that moment out. It was something about scoring a try that just intrigued me more than scoring a goal, I guess. So I played from when I was about, I think, maybe six. But yeah, that's kind of my earliest moment of playing that I think I'll kind of always treasure.
And would part of that be in soccer, or as association football, as my Welsh father used to call it, because rugby was football, a goal happens and you score it from quite close range generally, and it's been built up, but suddenly in rugby you can just turn on and you can run the length of the field. It has that thing about it, and it just does the excitement of that, especially for a kid.
Yeah, like everybody has, as I said, everybody has their thing, but it was just the wins. For me, seemed like it just meant more to me, I guess. It seemed like I had to work a little bit harder. Obviously, under-8 soccer isn't going to be the most hard-hitting, thrilling game in the world. Just felt like you kind of earned it a little bit more after it. Like I remember coming off the field, even as a young fellow, being absolutely busted from the game, coming up against some kids that definitely weren't 8 years old at the time. But a few passports got lost along the way, I'd say, when they got brought over. Stuff like that. It was just once you got a win like that, and as I said, when you scored a try, you made a good tackle. Just those things just really gripped me and helped me fall in love with the game.
In this country here, where we have native games, basically hurling and football, where the local school is predominantly part of the club as well, in Australia, at that age, would you have played a lot of rugby, or would you be started to be introduced to more rugby when you were at school?
Yeah, so yes, obviously there's hurling and football here as well. That I guess we have more rugby league and AFL in Australia would kind of be
the predominant
more
sports
of the native ones. But funny enough, it's more, I think, growing up when you're younger, union's probably the bigger draw, and a lot of the biggest schools play that. A lot of people don't really realise that all the big stars from rugby league, like a lot of them come from union and are like union stars at school, because there's just not really a great league comp. But the way that the league is set up with, they just got a lot of money, a lot of backing, and they just hand out these contracts. The way they do it is just way better than Australian rugby's doing at the moment. So they can entice these guys in, the ones that are superstars, and give them these contracts, and then help them flourish from there. They just sort of outbid everybody. So I'd say union is probably the bigger game when you're growing up. And then, yeah, AFL was sort of on the same time as union, so I never really got a chance to play it. I got to play league because it was on Sundays. But AFL never really slipped into my mind, just because I kind of would have had to pick between that and union, and union was always the thing that I wanted to do.
Were you always a winger, fullback?
No, I was.
This is going to be interesting, I think.
No, I played. I played number 10 till I was about 20, 21. I only made the switch to wing fullback. Yeah, really, when I was about 20, I'd say probably. Made the switch from 10 to fullback then. And saying that, every now and then, going into 10 and stuff a lot. And then the Brumbies, yeah, I went in there as a 10 as well, actually, more thinking about it. And I don't know what it was. I think Noel Alessia was coming through. Christian Leofano was there. And I think Tom Banks was maybe the only fullback at the time, so we kind of needed a bit of a backup. Backup person, that was me. Lucky enough, it just kind of seemed to happen, and then was training well at fullback, but obviously couldn't get rid of Tom Banks, and we had a couple injuries on the wing, and I was able to kind of get my chance and go from there. It just happened to be on the wing, and kind of have just stayed there for the last 5 years.
And is part of the fact that you'd played a lot of 10 on the way up, and then you played a bit of fullback as well, does that give you the ability? Because I've been struck by the fact when you arrived, the first thing I noticed about you was you were popping up in different places. You weren't just on the wing waiting for the ball like a lot of wingers are. This is my spot and I'm staying here. But you would go chasing the ball, looking for the ball. I want to be involved here. Did that come maybe from the 10 bit of your head going, I can see what's happening here, I'm reading this and I'm going there because the ball could come there?
Yeah, I think it definitely helped for sure. Kind of let me, kind of helped me see the game from more angles. Then, as you said, then some guys that maybe grew up playing on the wing the whole time. So that was, but that, as you said, like I just wanted to be involved, and I just couldn't do that if I was sitting down on my wing. That was just never how I played the game. I always just kind of, even when I was a number 10, like it, there was not much kicking was going on. It was running around and trying to throw the ball as much as possible, just have fun with it. So when I went to wing, I just found it. There was a couple of games where I was just stuck on the wing. And I remember going to my dad that, you know, it's boring, I don't like it out there, sort of thing. I'd kind of get thrown out there in a couple rep teams as well. I'd try there at 10, but the only way they could fit me in was on the wing every now and then. So, and he just said, well, go get it. Go look for it. Don't, you know, just because you've got a number on your back, don't kind of let us, you know, put you into that one position. You can still go get the ball, get involved and get your hands on it. You don't have to just sit out there because you're on the wing. And that's kind of how I've always looked at it ever since.
The way you speak there and you speak of your dad, I would think he was a fair influence on your pathway in your youth.
Oh, big time, big time. He was always, especially growing up, I look at it now and I'm very thankful. There was a lot of times where guys were going to parties and we had training on the next day, and he just said, no, you're not going. And I remember at the time being furious. Obviously, you know, growing up, being a teenager, you want to go drinking and getting with girls pretty much. And I was missing out on those opportunities for training on Sunday. It didn't seem like the greatest idea. And but yeah, no, looking back at it, everything he did, yeah, he did for me, and it was, I guess he believed in me probably a bit more than I probably even believed in myself, and very thankful for everything he did. You know, when my family growing up didn't really take many holidays, it was all the holidays were kind of traveling around paying for me to go play footy. So yeah, now that it's kind of paid off for me, I feel like it's paid off for them as well, so I'm very grateful in that way as well.
Yeah, it's always when I talk to rugby players, they often talk about their families or all sports people, because there is a lot of sacrifice involved, and there's a lot, especially when you get to a certain level, and you have to be, as you say, moved around. Australia's a big place. It's not like everything's happening in a small country. This country can be quite a big place if you're having to head down. Were you aware at the time that you were getting better at this game, that it was coming to you, and, you know, there was a, not so much a prize at the end of it, but there was a potential success at the end of it?
You know, honestly, I remember, look, I thought it was good. I was a good player, without pumping up my own tyres, I guess. I thought it was good, and, I made a couple rep teams here and there, but never really... For some reason, I just wasn't sure if I was going to make it into, like, it's just so many people don't make it, and it's just such a small number. You just, for some reason, I just didn't think it was going to happen to me. And I remember getting a call when I was in school to ask if I'd come do the preseason with the Brumbies. So I was 18, yeah, still in school at the time, and that's kind of, I guess, when it clicked a little bit, like, oh, this could actually be a thing. That really took me by surprise and really shocked me, and I guess for me that was an opportunity to kind of take it up another gear, and that's when I really started to believe that I could actually do this and I could make it. So right up until then, it was a dream that I didn't know if it was going to come true. Don't know why. It wasn't that I was doubting my abilities. It just, as I said, it's just such a small number of people get to do it. I just didn't know why I'd be one of them, sort of thing.
It strikes me that the faith put in you that you were given these opportunities actually possibly helped your self-confidence, in the sense that you were thinking, right, they've picked me, they've asked me to do this, obviously they believe in me and I'm going to show them.
Yeah, one of my other best mates, Ryan Lonigan, who's number 9 at the Brumbies at the moment, he had got a call up, could have even been a year before. Me and him were in rep teams together all the time, and seeing him with success was unbelievable. And then you kind of realise he's such a good player and where he's at, then I was starting to wonder, oh, okay, you know what I mean? You kind of get a few doubts of, am I good enough to be in that level as well? So as you said, when I got the opportunity and it came my way, it definitely was a nice thing. It was reassuring to know that all that hard work you've put in, all the games you play where you think you've done well, and like, yeah, all the effort that I kind of put in along the way wasn't for nothing. Not that, you know, if you don't make it, it's not for nothing. You still make great memories and have fun playing rugby, but rugby was all that I ever wanted to do. So if I didn't have that, I would have been pretty lost. So to know that they were looking and they were genuinely interested in giving me a shot, yeah, definitely helped the confidence grow a lot at that period of time.
We're just going to take our first ad break of the hour, come back after this short break, and we'll talk more about Mac Hansen's sporting life.
You're listening to Over the Line on Galway Bay FM, the sporting sound of Galway.
And you're very welcome back to the second part of Over the Line special guest slot this evening, where our very special guest is Ireland and Connacht wing, three-quarter and fullback, Mac Hansen. Mac, before the ad break, you were telling us how you broke into the Brumby setup and what it was like. Tell us what it was like in the Super 14 or the Super 15 as it was at the time. The style of rugby, did that suit the way you like to play the game?
Yeah, it did. As I said, I didn't last too long at 10, just because maybe my game management wasn't the best. You know, I just wanted to play rugby. I just wanted to have fun with it and try to run it from all angles.
Too much of a sevens kind of a thing in your head, is it?
Yeah, I guess I was lucky enough and unlucky enough to be watching guys like Dan Carter and Aaron Crude and those sort of guys growing up, and you watch them and they're literally, they could be 5 metres out and they just chuck it and run. Saying that, they were part of one of the best teams of all time, so it's a little bit different. And for me, I could do it. It could maybe pay off when you're playing kids at school, and then you start coming up against men who are big, who not only big, they're quick as well, athletic, and it just doesn't work the same. It doesn't work all the time. I work once or twice every blue moon, but you got to learn pretty quick that you're now in a man's game. You know, it's completely different to the footy that you're going to be playing at school.
Does that take long? You say how you realise that, but that obviously has to change your attitude towards the game personally as well for yourself.
Yeah, and I think it took. I had a pretty good preseason for first year in. Was able to learn a lot, and as I said, Brumbies is really tight. It's a real tight community. The way they set it up there, well, every player that leaves always says it, and then the ones that come back tell you it again and again. And every time you hear it, because it's like a broken record, everyone that comes in always says it. And I remember as soon as they start talking about it, I go, far out, here we go again. Like, I've heard this story a million times. And then when I left, I'm now one of those guys that is like, when I went back to Oz earlier in the year, I was one of the guys saying it to the fellas. I go, it's, you know, it's just different here. It's, I don't know what it is and how they've done it, but they've nailed it. So it took a little bit, but I was lucky to be mentored by so many great players at the time to help kind of speed me along as well. It wasn't cutthroat. It wasn't people hoping you'd fail. It was people picking you up and wanted to see you do your best, do as good as you could, not only for the team, but I guess, you know, just for yourself as well.
That's a very interesting thing you've said there, hoping you're not going to fail, because it's a very competitive world professional sport. And if you're playing, some other lad isn't playing and he mightn't be on the bench and he's going, I should be doing that. But if it becomes that cutthroat, it really does, it can be turned quite sour. It's fascinating that you've said that, because you need that coming from the top and you need the senior players buying into that, don't you?
Well, end of the day, I'm a new kid coming up, realistically trying to take their job sort of thing. Unfortunately, that's how it is. It's all the new kids are coming up, taking the older guys' jobs. That's just the evolution of rugby, and that's it's not, you know, no one's malicious with it or anything like that. It's just, yeah, as I said, it's just the way it is. So for guys to kind of help me along the way and, as I said, help me thrive and try to become a better player instead of kicking me when I'm down, not taking that time for those one-on-ones purely to maybe get another couple of years on their contract, because if I don't succeed, well, that's another kind of wave they can push to the side and wait for the next one to come through. But it's never like that, even especially Connacht as well. It's never been like that. Everybody's just wants to help each other, and I think that just comes down to picking the right group and picking the right fellas. I haven't come across a rugby player that's been like that yet, so hopefully it won't. I'd say you wouldn't last too long in a rugby setup anyway. I think you have to be that sort of person, otherwise you'll get pushed out pretty quick.
Did you find then, we'll say, the step up to the Super Rugby, that brought you to a new level? You said it took time, but did you enjoy that type of level? Because in this part of the world, watching Super Rugby, we believe it's designed for TV. There's a lot of forward passes let go and whatnot. It's just constantly to keep the game on the move. And that, I think, would suit the way you like to play the game.
Yeah, it did. It did. But it's also a lot harder when you're in it, obviously. It's a lot more running. Probably not as strategic as, I'd say, over here, as rugby in the URC, the Prem, or the French League at all. It's a lot more free-flowing, and it's slightly designed to entertain, which is great to see, and it's good footy people want to see. It also can be a little bit of a hindrance when it comes to, maybe a bit more crunch games. So it's something that I've had a bit of a mixed review on, just because it's the game is so different to how internationals are played. So I find it's kind of hard. It'd be quite hard to go from one back to the other sort of thing. I guess that's a question for super guys that are playing there at the moment. But I did enjoy it. It was another kind of thing for me to get confidence off as well, because I find that's what the battle is most for most rugby players as well. When you get through, so you get signed, you get contracted, and that's one battle that you've won. But then there's actually the one of playing, and then there's the one of, okay, I've played, now it's like, now I want to play more. And there's always a constant thing that you're kind of striving for. So once I was able to play a game, that was also a big relief, because, you don't want to be the guy that's signed and then not playing at all, or doesn't get the opportunity to take that extra step. So to get that for me was a huge confidence booster as well.
Then you're now established, let's say, at the Brumbies. Now tell us where the Connacht contact came first. And did somebody approach you from this side of the world and wanted to have a chat with you?
Yeah, so I was playing a few games and few guys in the team got injured, so I wasn't in the mix for a starting job. And then Solomon Okada, who's at Leicester Tigers at the moment, he got injured. And Tom Wright, who's now the fullback, he got injured as well. So I was next in line and kind of only got my breakthrough purely because those guys were out. So the time I was heading into that season, I was actually very close to going to Leicester Tigers. I think it was that season. I got the contract sent over, and I think I asked for a 2-year instead of a 3, and then COVID sort of hit, and they couldn't really come up with the funds anymore. So I was already kind of looking to leave that year. And just because I didn't feel, I was getting my opportunity, I was training well and stuff like that, and it just wasn't seeming to happening. I finally got my chance, and then I started playing footy again, same again. Thought I was playing had some pretty good games here and there, and thought I'd kind of earned a spot. And then the guys that were injured came back in, and look, in fairness, I understood they had a lot of points built up as well. Tom Wright was a Wallaby. Soli had, he'd been so good in the NRL and then had been so good in Union as well. So that's kind of what Dan said to me. He said, these guys, they've got a bit of money in the bank, so I'm going to reward them for that. And if they fall, you'll go in. And I was like, okay, fair enough. And I just felt like, what happened to my money in the bank sort of thing, that I kind of built up, and got a little bit sick of not playing and being pushed aside. And next thing I knew, Friendy kind of got on my manager and said they were interested. And I talked to Friendy a couple of days later, and I just said, I'm keen. Let's go. Let's do it. I was looking for something else. I knew that as I said, from looking to do it the year before, I thought, okay, I just need a bit of a change here to it wasn't even really to kind of jumpstart my career. I was just looking for something different. I thought rugby's such a short career, I may as well get a bit of travel out of it as well. And I'd always wanted to go to Ireland and experience it, seeing that's where my mum was from. And yeah, once the opportunity came, I just jumped at it.
Would you have known Andy Friend prior to that contact?
I'd known of him. I knew his, I'm actually good mates with his son, but I was good mates with his son, Jackson, who worked at the bar that everyone's heard that story, that I went to all the time. So didn't put two and two together that Friend, you know, Jackson Friend, Andy Friend. It wasn't until he told me that. He was like, oh, I heard you talking to, are you thinking of going to Connacht? And I was like, how do you know that? And he kind of was like, well, it's my dad. That's how, he's the coach. Okay, yeah, fair enough. As I said, once the opportunity came, I was just excited to get over there and try it and play it.
And where do you think that comes from, Mac? Because, yeah, you weren't getting a game, but you could have maybe moved in Australia or something. And a lot of players, they hold back. It's a big move. You know, you're coming halfway around the world. But you seem to, something in your head said, I want to do this. I want to try something absolutely different. Because you probably didn't have a clue what you were Connacht play rugby, but that you didn't know what the rest of it entailed. So there's something there in you that's prepared to jump.
Yeah, I'll be honest. I think the thing was that, so you know, I've talked about battles along the chat we've had here, and the one was always to play international rugby, and then I'll be honest, at the time I kind of had given up on that one a little bit. I just thought it's not going to happen. Same again, it's not for everyone. Not everybody gets to get the opportunity, and I thought, I just don't think I'm going to get it. So I may as well spend my career playing rugby around the world and travelling and getting all these stories, getting all these experiences, and doing that while I could, while I still could. And it just happened that, Ireland came up, and I just thought, that's great, that's where my mum's from, and I'd love to try it out and see where it goes.
Did your mum talk much about Ireland when you were growing up? Was it a reference point for you? Did she discuss her life in Ireland before she moved?
Yeah, so she was quite young still when they moved over. But my uncles and my nan and my granddad all still to this day have thick Cork accents. You know, they were a bit older and would always hear stories about them growing up and. My nana and my granddad always, told stories about them living back in Cork. And then same again, I'd always have all these, which I don't know if you guys would see them. I saw them as traditional Irish meals whenever I went over there, sort of thing, like all these stews and pretty much
bacon
just potatoes
and cabbage.
And so, yeah, bacon and cabbage. Whenever I went to my granddad's house, that is literally the only thing he made up. That and mashed potato was like pretty much all yep. I ate. Or toast with a heap of butter on from my nana. That was the go-to stuff, and that was like all we had. So always definitely got that part of Ireland when going over to their house. And yeah, as I said, it was, I knew that I had a lot of family there, and I thought it'd be great to go and see it.
It strikes me from your playing attitude when you play that this is much similar to your life. As you said, you're a bit of a free spirit, it strikes me, and you say, right, I'm going to try this. You're the type of individual, I think, that will try anything once as regards a new setup, the way you're coming to Ireland, and you were all the time wondering, well, if I don't try it, I won't know what it's like.
Yeah, try almost anything once. I thought, okay, I'll go over to Ireland, I'll play there. If that doesn't work out, something else will come up, I'll just go and do that. Kind of always thought I'd be doing footy, and I didn't think that I would fail here. Ireland had a good team at the time as well. I just didn't have high expectations on it. I just thought...
You didn't come saying to yourself that I would walk into international setup. You were coming just to play rugby.
No, I was just coming to, try something new and try and really enjoy my footy again. And I can say that Connacht and Ireland in general have just... Yeah, completely done that for me. That's why being injured at the moment is so hard, because I was enjoying it all so much. And yeah, I'm very thankful for that. It wasn't that I fell out of love with rugby sort of thing, but definitely felt a little bit more like a job sort of towards the end of my time at Brumby. So to come over here and get, I guess, the love for it rejuvenated again has been something I'm going to be forever grateful for.
I was struck by the fact, and I think I've said this to you before, I can also say Andy Friend said, "We've got somebody coming." He said, "You're going to like him." And I was at him saying, "Who is it? Where's he coming from? Can't tell you. Not telling you." And we didn't get the name right because I kept picking names out of hats. But you landed here in July when it was probably about the same temperature as a winter's day in Canberra. And within that try you got against, this was the Stormers, you went about 45 metres, and I was commentating that night, and you're not allowed to shout and roar when you're commentating, but I was summarising, and I was sort of going, yeah, go on, get there, get in. And I just thought, wow, that's something different. That's going to be noticed. And it was noticed. And then you went and played with Ireland. And did you ever sort of have to pinch yourself and go, how does this happen? I came here, now I'm playing for Ireland. Now I'm going to New Zealand on a tour with Ireland. It's fair. If you wrote it in a book, people would say that's a good bit of fiction.
Yeah, no, I pinch myself most days for what I got over here. You know, it is a new life, but new friends, as I said, new family, new love for the game. It's something that if you told me I'd be here before I came over 3 years ago, I'd tell you I'm absolutely dreaming. There'd be no way on earth. So, but as I said, I think that's the reason I was able to kind of do that, was to just come over here with not too many expectations on myself, just to enjoy it and have fun and take a chance on myself, which I think, you know, a lot of people could probably do more of. It's, you know, it's I feel like when you do that and you go in with that attitude, you're more likely to succeed than fail.
Well, we're going to take the second break of this hour now and come back to us in a couple of moments' time. We'll talk once again to Mac Hansen about his involvement with the Irish squad, the World Cups, what could have been, and his future plans.
You're listening to Over the Line on Galway Bay FM, the sporting sound of Galway.
And you're very welcome back to part three of Over the Line, where, of course, our special guest this week is Mac Hansen. Mac, before we went to the break, you spoke about how you got involved with the Irish squad and how everything was going well, and you've already always spoken about confidence. Do you think that the fact that Irish squad that you arrived into were going on such a rich vein of form probably helped and eased you into international rugby a lot quicker than you may have thought yourself?
Absolutely. I'm incredibly lucky to be playing with a lot of guys that I think by the end of their careers will go down as some of the greats, for sure. You know, the team that we've kind of built up is something you only dream of being involved in. So, yeah, to be involved in it myself, is that's another thing I've got to pinch myself about. Like, it just makes my job a whole lot easier knowing that 1 to 23, even 1 to 30, 1 to 40 blokes you could put in there that are playing in Ireland at the moment could go in there and they're world class and they could go in there and absolutely do a job for you. So when you not only have confidence, yeah, the bloke beside you, it makes your job so much easier, for sure.
I'm part of that, you know, that tour to New Zealand. I mean, I didn't have at last beaten New Zealand, but to go to New Zealand and win a series, lose the first test match. And we all sat here and thought, here we go. First test is gone now, and the second it'll be close, and then the third will be the usual nightmare. To go down there and win that, and you were an integral part of that, that's when I think people really began to do a bit of dreaming here, because nobody wins series, three-match series in New Zealand, and to go down and win 2-1, that must have been huge. What did that feel like to be there?
I'll be honest, I couldn't really believe it. It was, saying that, sorry, we knew that we could do it. We were, I think, we got the feeling, especially after the first game, that we were the only ones that thought that as well. Nothing to do with Ireland supporters or anything like that, but, you know, we, as I said, we didn't give everyone great hope by the first game either. You know, they kind of did a number on us, so, but we kind of had that feeling that, okay, you know, no one thinks we can do it. What's the worst thing that can happen? And especially when you know that you can do it. And that first game, it was just, you know, we were, people had a lot of, had colds. Me and Finley had COVID, or a lot of things went wrong. We'd only just arrived the week before, and we kind of knew that going into it. We knew that, all right, we're not absolutely prepared. We've got another two games here to go on and win it. And we're a completely good enough team to be able to do it. So going in there, winning the first game, getting that win over there on home soil, on their home soil for the first time was incredible. And then going into that third, it was strange because it was the same again. No one had given us a chance after we'd just done it. And that purely because New Zealand don't lose two games in a row at home. Growing up in Australia, I never saw it. I can't remember. I don't think it has ever been done.
I think France might have done it once, but
no, I don't think so. We're the only ones.
Fair enough. All right, we'll keep that bit of history.
But it is like you rightly say, they don't win, they don't lose back to backs. We don't win over there. Teams from this part of the world. But I would think there was a lot of soul searching was done after the first test, and did that show the solidity and, I suppose, the camaraderie that was in that squad that you ramped yourself back to be able to do that? As William said, it was normally the gallant first test performance, but this was different.
Look, in New Zealand, in Auckland as well, at Eden Park, you know, that's their bread and butter there. They genuinely don't lose there. They just full on don't. So, as I said, there was everything that could have gone wrong for us that first week, sort of did a little bit. Not using excuses at all. New Zealand were unreal in that game. They were very hard to deal with and were, I think, a little bit more prepared than we were. We kind of maybe coming off a good Six Nations, just losing to a really good French team. Maybe we're in love with ourselves a little bit, but that's the best thing about the team is if we are, we snap out of that very quick and we're back to want to be as best as we can. So that was our kind of thought going into the game, and we kind of knew that we were underdogs and knew that nobody gave us a chance, and that was the thing that really gave us a chance, that nobody thought we could do it, and we just knew we could. So we kind of flew in under the radar as underdogs. And then that was the strange thing, once we got it done, it was the exact same feeling. Like nobody, for some bizarre reason, even though we'd just done it, thought we could do it. And I remember going in there going, like, this is unreal. This is perfect. It wasn't like they were worried or anything like that. They were just like, it was a one-off. We'll be fine. And same again, we just knew that we could go in there and we believed in each other, each person that was on the park, and we can get it done. And that's exactly what we did. And to see how a lot of the guys that reacted after the whistle, the travelling fans going over them, celebrating with them, seeing family, friends, and just being in that change room was incredible. Yeah, I've been very lucky to have a lot of things with that team that will kind of stick with me for the rest of my life, and that was definitely one of them for sure.
Is the what you just said there signals to me the difference you feel between the game in this part of the world and the game you experienced in Australia, in the sense that Ireland, the Irish squad, had achieved something that no Irish squad had ever done. And the quick connection with family, as you said, and supporters was so instant out there. To share the celebrations with your family and your friends, that just strikes me. It's something you feel, this is an Irish thing.
100%. You know, I see a lot of people say, you know, I'm not Irish and all that, even though I've got probably more Irish family than Australian, but I might not have the accent or anything like that, but you know, I call this is my home now, so I'm happy that I'm here, and Island Rugby's given me everything that I ever dreamed of. So as long as I'm playing rugby and as long as I'm here, I'm going to be doing everything I can to repay that as well. So I don't know, I couldn't imagine playing for anybody else, and I never in a million years would want to either. This is, as I said, this is home now, and I'm beyond grateful, kind of lost for words for what they've given me.
And is part of that when you came here, look, this is a very sporting city and we love our sports stars, but is there a better respect here between fans and players? You're given a bit of space. They still want to talk to you or maybe get a selfie or that sort of thing. But there's a... I always think it's done in a better way than I've seen it done abroad, where there's a lot of pressure put on sports people. Whereas here, yeah, that's Mac or that's Finlay or that's Bundy or, you know, that's Jack Carty. It's... There is that... it's almost like a love for sports people. There's a respect for them because you're representing me because I wasn't good enough to do what you do. I'd love to wear a Connacht jersey, but I wouldn't. The only time I'd ever put one on as a fan, I wasn't good enough at rugby. But you're kind of, you're representing this area.
Yeah, I think, look, I think the fans here are by far the best. You, absolutely, they proved it at the World Cup, and I think Connacht fans especially prove it every week when it's pissing rain. The winds are blowing an absolute gale. It's absolutely miserable to be out there, and they'll come every week. You know, I think that just shows what type of fan and what type of person that we have in this country, which is great. And then, as you said, yeah, it's everybody. I think shows a lot of respect and is so nice to us and loving to us. But I think it's also because we put everything out there for them, and I think that's the best thing about the relationship between fans and sports people in Ireland is, yeah, we give everything we can, and I think they know that. I really truly do. So it makes it a lot easier to show respect to us when we're given everything for that green jersey and trying our absolute best to win for not only ourselves, obviously, but a lot of the time when we're in camp, it's all our chat is about, you know, inspiring a nation and trying to get people to fall in love with rugby again. So, you know, to see ourselves doing that is a win in itself.
Talk to us about the World Cup. Ireland went in as favourites, joint favourites in many people's book, but the draw was always going to be, say that we were going to, the quarter final was going to be the key. Tell us about, you obviously went in with huge confidence into the competition, but tell us about what you felt like to play in it and how the progress went and unfortunately what didn't happen.
Yeah, it was I don't even know how to describe it. It was crazy. The crowds, the fans, they made it so memorable and so enjoyable that it's just bizarre at times as well. Like just walking around the stage to everybody singing at you like that. I'll always remember driving into the games. That was my favourite part, was actually driving in, and anyone that was over there or anyone that's been to Stade de France, you know, there's a big long walk into the stadium. So we'd drive past that, and once people would see our bus, they would just sprint to it, scream at the top of their lungs, banging on it, just like going mad. And it was so cool. It was like something I've never seen before. It's what you looked like. Almost a bunch of soccer hooligans just going berserk. You know how worked up they get. That's what it felt like, and I think that's great. You know that everyone knows the soccer fans get a little bit over the top, but I think Union can deal with a lot more of that. And I think that was the first sign of us seeing that really like absolute diehard support, and it was unbelievable to be a part of. And we had that every game, especially the New Zealand one as well. The South Africa and New Zealand ones were obviously massive. And I constantly get asked about it, and you know, I really don't think that we played bad in the New Zealand game. It wasn't a case of that. It was just two teams that, like, if you called that a World Cup final, you'd be happy with it, sort of thing. You know what I mean? Like, it was just two teams gave everything they had, and it was just unfortunate that on the day New Zealand got the bounce of the ball. And yeah, it wasn't that I didn't feel like we made too many mistakes or that we weren't up for it at all. I just thought that they just showed up and played a really good game of footy. And, yeah, as I said, they just had a few things go their way that ultimately got them the win. And, you saw New Zealand, the way they took it right to the wire in the final as well. They were obviously a team that was good enough to be there. And to have the sort of match we had with them, I think, it's upsetting that we didn't make final, but it shouldn't sadden people. It should, you know, if anything, get them excited, because there's a lot of guys in that squad returning to the next World Cup.
Where we see it maybe as a disappointment. And the hard-nosed rugby people here in this country, we said, "Now here we go again. We didn't pass the quarterfinals. What the hell is going on?" But you just there, from a player's perspective, see it a little differently. That you know you were involved in that game. You've seen what happened. And at the end of the day, as you say, the bounce the ball went to the New Zealand way. And you probably take a lot of solace from the fact what New Zealand went on and done by getting to the final. I know they didn't win it, but still in all, you can see, look, they had to get over to us, but they continued that on.
Yeah, look, it's don't get me wrong, it's incredibly disappointing, and it's gut wrenching to think of. Still to this day, it still eats away at me. I'd say it still eats away at a good few people. So, not making excuses on that point at all. But the way I've kind of from taking a step away from the World Cup and looking back at it, I said, if anything, it's made me really excited for the next one. I know it's the chat, it's like you don't want to be talking about the next one already. There's such a long way to go, but one of these days an Irish team's going to make it past the quarterfinals. Like it's going to happen. And I think that you've seen so the under-20s do so well the last couple of years, how the team's still doing, how all the provinces are doing. Like there's so many good footballers in Ireland coming through and that are still here, that we're in such a good stint. And coming into the next World Cup, I think we're going to be, I genuinely think we're going to be even in an even stronger position. So, one of these days will happen. You just got to stick with us, and I'm sure there'll be a lot to celebrate at the end.
Certainly will. But the next question is, when are you going to get to pull on the green jersey of Connacht? Because there's still three games left in this season. There's a lot of rugby for Connacht to play. And you must be itching to get out there.
Yeah, I just want to help out wherever I can. I just see how hard the guys are working week in, week out. Hasn't been an easy run for us at all. We've had a lot of backlash, and some of it warranted, some of it I don't think it is. There's just some games. As I said, there's just some games that some teams just turn up, and it hasn't always gone our way. But we're still found ourself in sixth spot here, with a chance to make finals, and we showed last year if we make finals we're a dangerous team. So I'm not too worried about all the Ireland stuff or any of that at the moment. I'm just worried about getting back to the Dexcom Stadium or wherever it is, and putting on that jersey. So as I said, just to help out wherever I can. I just want to play footy again pretty much with my mates.
You think we'll get it soon?
Yeah, I don't know. I don't want to put a date on it.
No, I know.
But I'm doing everything I can. The physios are doing everything they can, and hopefully it'll be soon rather than later.
You're 26, still young.
Yeah,
a lot of rugby left in you. Where do you see when the rugby career of Mac Hansen comes to an end? What do you see yourself doing, or do you have any plans of what you'd like to do?
Hopefully, yeah, still got a good few years until I have to kind of sort that out. But got a few things that I'm quite interested in. I thought, I'd love to do a bit of coaching, I think, afterwards. That's always really interests me. And, you've always been told what to do your whole rugby career. It'd be nice to be telling people what you want for once would be handy. I think I want to stay involved. So either that or like a player agent, something like that. I'd love to own a bar, but that's probably just not feasible when you're sitting there drinking all the pints yourself. I've got a few things that definitely interest me, but as I said, I'm not too focused on anything like that at the moment, just focused on doing what I can here and enjoying my rugby while I still can.
One strikes me that you're itching to get back on the field to play. We kind of wait to see that. Let's hope it is this season. You're looking forward, obviously, to play at the end of the season. Looking forward to all that Connacht are going to go as far as they can in the competition and obviously get back into an Ireland jersey. Mac, well, thank you for your time. It's been an absolute pleasure. We'd like to see you back as quick as we can before this season is out. But whatever happens, we wish you every success going forward. Thank you.
Thanks, guys. Appreciate it.
You're listening to Over the Line on Galway Bay FM, the sporting sound of Galway.